Hello and welcome back to the Grey Cricketer Podcast, day two at the SCG. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by David Edwards. Dave, day two, welcome back to the SCG. It's been another day of Test cricket. I'm not sure how memorable. I suppose the biggest thing of the day is Steve Smith has just gone past 6,000 runs. Would you say that's the biggest thing that's happened that we'll take away from today at all?
It's probably the biggest thing that's happened, Higgos, and it's good to be back with you and the listeners at the SCG again for day two of the Test match. Probably maybe Bob Hawke trying desperately to scull a schooner on Channel 9. It's probably the biggest stuff.
Mate, that was really interesting what happened there, because like previously they show that on the big screen and the whole crowd gets behind him.
Yeah.
And the way that played out was that he was holding the beer. He had a full beer and he was sitting in the SCG Trust.
Yep.
And he had a full beer and he like kept looking up to the big screen, waiting to be put on the big screen. So then like the crowd could go like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he was waiting for it. And then he obviously got the nod just like, you're on TV now, Bob, do it.
Yeah.
And he did it. And Pat Cummins was bowling and he did like the first half of the beer. But then it took him so long to get to this point where he almost got stuck that they had to cut back to the cricket.
Had to go on an ad break. Had to go on Gel and Ashes ad break.
They cut back to him and then he's like finished the beer. And it's just like the whole thing was like fucking bizarre. That now
the
SCG test is now known for two things, like the Jay McGrath test, which is obviously a wonderful thing, and fucking Bob Hawke sculling a beer.
Yeah, and taking 3 minutes to do so.
It's
pretty tough work. I mean, how old? He's getting on a little bit.
He's 89, is he 90?
He's nudging.
Mate, he's properly frail as well. Like, he's not in the peak of his health, and nor does he need to be. Mate, I just find it really bizarre. Like, this is like we need this. Oh, at SCG Test, Bob Hawke sculls a beer on TV. On the big screen, we clap and we love it.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like whack a bingo. It's like the bingo, you know, if there's anything we know is that, you know, we love repeating everything, don't we? We love repeating everything.
Circuits, chops, champs.
Just all over again. Keep listening though,
mate. I found that bizarre. But anyway, so we'll talk about Steve Smith now. He's just gone past 6,000 runs. So he's done it. He's now the second quickest in the history of Test cricket in terms of innings to reach 6,000 Test runs. He did it in 111 innings.
I like how it had to be specified by innings, because was Bradman? There was a war.
Yes, there was a
there
war.
There was a war there that kind of
so you couldn't do it
out of action for a while.
Yeah. So just to put it in context, so Steve Smith's the second quickest in terms of innings, 111. Bradman did it in 68, which is just fucking unbelievable. And also, well, I suppose the amazing thing about Steve Smith, though, is I just read a stat from our colleague Nerily Meadows at Fox Sports that it took him 23 innings to get a Test match 100. So his first 23, no hundreds.
No.
23 to 111, he's got 25 or something ridiculous now, 22, 20, whatever. It's amazing. But are you bored of watching him bat?
No, absolutely. It's like daggers to me, every Steve Smith innings.
So just before we came over here, Stuart Broad found the edge to Steve Smith. Stuart Broad on 399 Test wickets as we are recording this. And the edge fell between Bairstow and Alistair Cook in first slip. Can you imagine the angst of, like, they can't get this guy out all summer. Yep. They don't know how to get him out. He nicks one and it goes between keeper and first slip. Oh.
Well, I saw the veins on the side of Broad's forehead.
Mm.
That was a real telltale sign that this would have meant a lot to him. 400 wickets, get Steve Smith, nudge that up. But fuck me, you've got to take those chances when they come, don't you?
Mm, absolutely, yeah. So, Edos, we have been a little bit self-serving in the past about talking about, you know, who we've seen in the press box. But I do have a relatively interesting story that I want to tell you about. So, you know, I think a lot of people will, like, kind of take for granted, like, how... Like, maybe I take that granted, but like, it's fucking hard to like get people like on our podcast, because we're nobodies. And that's why maybe
We've said so many times, we are three blokes from the internet.
We're three blokes from
the internet. I mean, we are in name with Fox Sports, but you know, we don't really rely on them. We don't rely on them at all to get guests. We have to go and slide into DMs, as we've always said.
So
getting guests isn't easy.
No. So when people come on and talk to us, it's actually quite a thrill for us, and it's really nice they do that. But then there's people above that. I'm just talking about Shane Warne, basically.
Yep.
People above that who you're almost like a bit starstruck by.
Yeah.
I would say I was starstruck when I saw Warne, but like he does have a presence about him, and his new face, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm leaving the day's play yesterday, Edos, after putting out the podcast. And I'm walking to the lift, and there's myself, there's Dan Bresig, Jeff Lemon. We get into the lift. Into the lift comes Kerry O'Keefe, Gus Warland, Shane Warne, former Prime Minister John Howard, and his wife. And we're all in one lift.
His wife Jeanette.
And his wife Jeanette. And I just thought, there's no way this is real life. And like,
that's like, you know, name five dinner guests.
That'd be
if you're on an island.
That'd be the weirdest dinner.
It would be a good dinner.
It would be a dinner. It'd be something. It'd be a
dinner.
Anyway, so, but when we get into the lift, then
Isn't a lot of time in the lift. We should just specify for listeners, because it's only three floors you've got to go down. You've probably got about 10 to 15 seconds in that lift.
Correct.
From the time the doors open and close.
So we're in the lift, and then I think it was Gus Warland or maybe Kerry O'Keefe said, "What are you doing tonight, Warnie?" And then Warnie said, "Ah, I'm doing something I shouldn't be." And my ears pricked, and I just I looked at Dan Bredig, and
he said, "I'm doing something I shouldn't
be"?
He
was like doing those one of the things where, like, oh, I'm disappointed in myself, but you're going to love this story, and you're going to love me for telling it.
Yeah.
So he said that, and then he, like,
what phone does he have?
It was an iPhone. Yeah. It was an iPhone. I've got his number.
Yeah, the 8.
And,
success, big hands.
And he got his phone out, and he had like one photo on his phone. I didn't see the photo, but basically he said, "I'm taking her to dinner and I'm taking her home with me."
Right.
And so that's what Warnie was up to last night. And I just thought, he's just living a different world, isn't he? But there's no way he's ever going to hear this.
Were there guffaws of laughter from John Howard and Jeanette Howard? what was former Prime Minister John Howard's reaction to that? Did he have his iPod in?
He said stopping the boats or something. I didn't really.
just start chanting.
But I just found this situation that I found myself in. It was just like, I mean, I'm just a bloke from the internet.
Gus Warren, Kerry O'Keefe, Ian Higgins, Shane Warne. One third of the great cricketer and some of the most influential people that
I know. So I told my mum that this morning because obviously, why wouldn't you? And she said, "Did they know who you were?" Like, in what world would they fucking know who the great cricket is? Or what even... Who are... So anyway, Mum, they didn't know who I was. Okay. So that's one story. That's how it's going. If you want to reach out to us with the hashtag AskTGC, Dave and I are going to be here all week doing the podcast. We like hearing your questions. I'm just going to wrap up the show before we get... Adam Collins, who's very generously given us 15 minutes of his time to speak to us. So, hashtag AskTGC, your questions and our answers.
Can I just point out to the listener that you are fumbling around looking for these questions shaky internet?
I was waiting in New South Wales office. All right, here we go.
Here they are, they've loaded.
Okay, Ed Howard asks, hashtag AskTGC, "Gents, love the pod, makes the winter commute in London bearable. Quick question, can Khawaja's poor form be put down to the state of his rig? Looks like he's put on a few kgs recently. Can the same be said for Stoneman and his village stick? Thanks." That's Ed's question from London. So, I mean, Khawaja,
has he put on a few kilos? He looks pretty good.
I mean, Ed's obviously taken notice. I actually hadn't noticed that at all.
I hadn't noticed it.
We've just seen him score.
One thing I have noticed is that when he's often photographed or in casual clothing, he likes to do the top button up. You know, that thing that's quite popular now with
the
kids.
Oxford look, yeah.
The Oxford look, the mod look.
The worst thing about Khawaja is that he wears a watch on the field. He wears a watch on the field. You know, it's like he fields in a watch. It's a big watch. I don't like it.
Dinner reservations.
What about Stoneman though? What about Stoneman's village stick?
Jesus. So what's wrong with his stick?
I'm trying to think of Stoneman's stick. I think it's like it's not a reputable brand on his stickers on his bat.
Right.
So I mean that's better than Bairstow with no stickers at all.
Nothing.
I mean that is kind of a bit village. All right.
Or I'll need to watch his stick next time he hits 20.
George says, at grade cricketer, hashtag AskTGC, "Why does my dad think the only reason I don't currently play pro cricket is because I spent my teenage years, and in quotes, trying to hit the ball too hard, rather than the huge amount of evidence to say it was the lack of ability that was the issue?" Good question, George.
Well, your dad's being nice there, isn't he?
You always try to hit it too hard. You never caress the ball.
Would you prefer your dad say, "You are fucking shit"? That's what he's saying there, isn't he?
Yeah. So George's dad seems like quite a nice bloke.
He seems like a lovely, father.
Because actually, that compliment is like, you know,
you hit it too hard. You're unlucky.
You always try to hit it too hard, you know, because you're so big.
It was going over.
Yeah,
all lies. Like it was hitting six pairs of stumps.
All right, last question, Adam Brown. Using the hashtag AskTGC. "When discussing an LBW decision where the batsman is clearly out, is the correct term plumb, like the fruit, or plumb as in perfectly vertical? What is the history behind the terminology? Well, Adam's come to the wrong place if you want to ask like historical-based questions.
Well, Adam Collins has already left the building, so we should have kept him on for that.
So he's asked, is it plum like the fruit, P-L-U-M, or plum with a B, as in perfectly vertical?
Where's it derived from? Why assume perfectly vertical, plum with a B? It's not plum the fruit.
Yeah, why would it be plum seeded the fruit?
Well, why would it be?
Why would it be the seeded fruit?
Fucking hell. Screen these questions next time.
Adam Collins.
Thank you, though. We know. We appreciate it.
Adam Collins coming up. We'll be back tomorrow. Day three. Jay McGrath Day. See you tomorrow.
Here goes that time of the episode when we bring in someone much more credentialed than us in terms of cricket to discuss what's going on in the Test Arena. And we are here at the SCG again, and we're with our good friend of the show, Adam Collins. Welcome.
It's good. You always say that when I come on the show, but I feel thoroughly...
Everyone is a good friend of the show.
Not that. I love the friend of the pod, Jibbo, but it's more the how credentialed the people you bring in are, which suggests that you haven't spent that much time in the press box. You don't know what it is that we really do, which is just fuck around on the computer for 6 hours and pretend to watch the play and reconstruct it via Crick Info and then write our pieces.
Oh, well, yeah, you did tell me about how you plagiarise all your pieces. So.
Yeah. So apart from all that, no. Yeah. It's lovely to be back on the show.
Well, Colo, it's 5:15 in the afternoon as we record this, so there's a few moments left in the day's play, but run us through the day's play, day two of the SCG test, as you've seen it so far.
Yeah, well, England won the morning. I think that expectations were fairly managed for them when play started. It was what sort of debacle were we going to see? Were they going to be losing their 7 wickets for 30 or 80? But they exceeded the expectations by piling on. I think it was 116. Mm-hmm. Curran didn't bat particularly gracefully, but did the job. Broad, I think that the Broad renaissance with the bat is noteworthy. How he was the walking wicket for the first three test matches and now has found a way to, you know, not in an orthodox fashion, but be able to score again. He's been important in the last two test matches.
Third most sixes in the history of the SCG.
Had a cracking stat. I think that was a Rick Finlay stat from the ABC. So you've got Adam Gilchrist, who played, I think, 11 test matches here. Broad's played 3 innings here, and he's second on the list of most sixes hits. Yeah. So well played, Stuart Broad. I quite like the pantomime villain stuff with him. I know it's obviously nonsense. They continue to boo him years on for a ball he hit to the wicketkeeper, which deflected the first slip. Of course, the beat-up merchant still saying that he flogged it the first slip and didn't
smashed
walk.
It.
Yeah, you know.
Can I just say on that, I don't care if he fucking hit it to mid-off and didn't walk.
Well,
who's ever
what does it matter where on the field were?
Well, the walking culture, it's always been the other way around, has it not? Through history, it's been that Australians do not walk because we allow the umpire to make the decision.
I think Gilchrist started walking and just muddied the
un-Australian. That was un-Australian.
Yeah.
But only really happened.
Patriotic.
But it only really happened once, didn't it? I mean, the Gilchrist not walking thing is all about one time he inside edged onto his pad. Admittedly, a World Cup semi final, quite a significant sort of moment in his career. But still, it's not as though he was routinely, you know, sort of going, oh, sorry, fellas, no, I did hit that. I'll fuck off now. Like, it wasn't really.
Well, it's funny because, like, it never really worked for me. There was, in fact, speaking of SCG test matches, he was given out by Billy Bowden at an SCG test where it actually might have been in an Ashes game as well, and it might have been Liam Plunkett. Or it could have been against Sri Lanka. I've just made something up there.
Given Plunkett's never played an Ashes test match, it probably isn't that.
Okay, so I will correct you.
So it's not Plunkett, but yeah, he cover drove a ball, hit the rough, and he played and missed. And Billy Bowden gave him out. So even though he was known as a walker, so it didn't even yield him any benefit of all of being known as a walker. So
well, the answer is just never walk.
Moeen Ali walked today, actually. I mean, DRS is different now because what's the point of, you know, you're sort of gambling?
Well, if you know you've hit it and you're going to go upstairs and, you know, but as Eddie Guerrero, the famous WCW wrestler, used to say, cheat to win. So I adopt
famously. So Stuart Broad whacked some sixes. What happened next?
Well, I think that England bowled really well before lunch, picking up Bancroft. I saw a good stat about Bancroft's dismissals. All 7 of his dismissals in this series, none of them have swung more than 1 degree. So, in other words, he's missing straight balls. And I think bowl at the stumps, and that's the majority of his dismissals have been bowled. So, or leg before.
His weakness is balls on the stumps.
It seems like a
fundamental thing that as a batsman that you should be wary of.
But maybe as an opener, it's not. Like, think about it. Just step back from that. Right. Maybe it's not as an opener. Not a lot of balls do hit the stumps.
So maybe
it is about he's vulnerable to when the balls is pitched up. But nonetheless, the way we saw Renshaw jettisoned after 3 Sheffield Shield games, I think that he might be in strife for South Africa purely on that. that metric, because how could they retain him? Also, given that Sean Marsh has played well in that part of the world, he's down at number six. Number five, isn't he? Because Marsh into the 11. But nonetheless, I can see a world where Marsh would slot into the opening spot, make some room for Peter Handscomb. Hopefully that gives Maxwell a chance to tour. I think that's probably a 50-50 shot at this stage. But they're not going to play another Sheffield Shield round before they pick that squad for South Africa. That's significant as well. So whatever we see here will probably dictate what happens for South Africa. So that could put...
So the selectors have had a wonderful season, I guess. Yeah. And a lot of things come off for them, except the opening position is still an absolute fucking who's going to do it.
Yeah, it's a bit of Australia's Got Talent sort of contest still for that position. And I mean, I'd argue that the way they rationalised the Maxwell decision for the one-day squad reflects the fact that they kind of got lucky with the test squad. But on the other hand, the other way of framing that is that is that they applied the right kind of metric to how you're meant to pick a side. Selectors aren't meant to just tally up spreadsheets and hit enter and that who plays in it. You're meant to show broader nous than that, and that was what they applied for Tim Payne, which has been a raging success. Mitchell Marsh as well, that he wasn't quite ready to play the first test match, but after a couple of Sheffield Shield games at home, they backed him in on those grounds when he was in form. So look, there's more to it than simply going through numbers. So when they said Maxwell was omitted on the basis that he'd averaged 20 in the last 22 innings he'd played for Australia at one day level, that reminded me of when Rod Marsh said that the reason they weren't picking Klinger was because of his first-class batting average. Well, Klinger started playing first-class cricket in 1999 when the Millennium Bug was still a thing, you know what I mean? And yet that was still...
it was a different world.
But that was still an input to the decision-making of Rod Marsh in 2015. I mean, again, that says a little bit about Rod Marsh, but still, when they reflected on Glenn Maxwell's recent average for the one-day side, that completely disregards that... I mean, we all know that Glenn Maxwell is one of the most dynamic match winners in white ball cricket in the world. You can kind of talk about a prophet not being welcome in their hometown, the old biblical quote. Mm. I mean, Glenn Maxwell is far more welcome anywhere but Australia. You look at the response to his omission from someone like Geoff Thompson that said, oh, he can't play. I mean, obviously he can play, but he still has this... There's a perception around Glenn Maxwell that if he doesn't quite... hit your erogenous zones that he shouldn't be in the side when if he's not quite playing the game the way you want it, that maybe he should be out of international consideration when the selectors have got to have a broader view than that.
I love that binary nature from Geoff Thompson. He cannot play. He can or he can't, and he cannot.
Well, they really laid into him on Channel 9 the other day before the match started, saying he can't play the short ball, doesn't train well. Everyone was getting into him Shane Warne was really leading the charge against him, fellow Victorian.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to ask yourself the relationship between how close that relationship is between, and that's a worthy discussion point. Mm. Is that CA and Channel 9 are obviously incredibly close, whether that's at the website or the Twitter account or the way they administratively operate, and I'm sure that when you're working in that relatively small gene pool, that there's going to be a lot of crossover in opinion. Mm. So I'm fairly confident that whatever reasons they've used internally to dismiss Maxwell from the one-day side, remembering he wasn't actually in the side in India, he was dropped there, but there's a massive difference between being left out of the side when you're on tour and being omitted from the squad altogether, especially considering he's been in every one-day squad Australia has played in Australia since 2012. So it's a big call, especially when there's a World Cup. I think it's 19 months away or something like that in England, and they're trying to firm up their position for that. The idea that Maxwell wouldn't be a part of that World Cup squad's almost fanciful until now, where it's very much the case that he might be. So, I mean, I know it's not what we're here to talk about, but we're talking about selection. That Maxwell decision is noteworthy.
We'll bring it back to today's play and your other thoughts on that. So, obviously, once we were able to get England out eventually, we've now had a bat. And what are your thoughts on how Australia's kind of gone so far? Khawaja Smith hitting some runs, and also maybe your thoughts on the young leg spinner, Crane.
Yeah, well, let's start with Khawaja, who I think the most significant part of his innings so far is that he's batting quite poorly out there. He's not hitting the ball well.
It's the worst fucking 69.
Yeah.
We're recording at 5 p.m. at the moment. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to go to 100, but it's been probably the worst 69 I've seen.
I've been watching him pretty closely. I'm definitely writing about him with stumps tonight. And I think that, you would never have called Nusman Khawaja innings ugly 2 years ago. He was the most in-form, elegant player on planet Earth, said at the time. Absolutely. If you're playing Mars, he'd be the first man on the team sheet in the summer of 15-16. Now he is having to go through a period inside the Australian side when he is out of form. And that happens to most players at different periods of their career. This series so far, he's looked out of form and incapable of turning it around. An airy 50 at Adelaide where he got out a few balls after the lights went on. In Perth, he was riding shotgun with Steve Smith in the slipstream of a player at the peak of his powers. This is tough work out there. They've got a, you know, not a huge total on the board to chase down to get first innings lead, but not for nothing either. It's pretty slow out there, pretty hard to bat. So it's admirable, I think, that Khawaja is still there, still battling through. As for Crane, he gives it a rip, doesn't he? You can't ask much more of a leg spinner on debut. And I should note that I think when we came in to record this, on five separate occasions, he had to pull out of his run-up before delivering. So he's, you know, I don't know whether that's the yips or a bit of confidence or whatever, but there's a lot going on above the shoulders. You don't stop in your run-up with that level of frequency if everything's operating as it should be. But yet, he's still getting to the crease and finding a couple of inside edges. He beat Khawaja. He got Khawaja's outside edge one time as well, I think it was. He showed some...
Has he always been a guy who gives it a rip, or is this youthful exuberance on the national stage?
No,
this
is his game. This is his game. He has a crack. Will McPherson, who's obviously another friend of your pod's, written about him during the week for the Times, wrote a really lovely piece about the way he goes about it. And the way he got into this side is because he's considered to be a player who can operate in Australian conditions, whether that's, you know, retrofitted after he played here in club cricket or otherwise. It's a compelling narrative given the way he's bowled today. He hasn't taken any wickets, but he could have taken a few. And the problem with England when it comes to spinners historically is their favoured finger spinners. And was talking elsewhere about this yesterday on another broadcast, and about the conservatism of England selections and how they've tended to favour finger spinners as a means of drawing up runs and holding up an end, as opposed to Australians, which have traditionally we favoured wrist spinners who take a bit more of a punt. So I hope from an England perspective that they do persist with Mason Crane. He's 20 years old. He's the same age as Shane Warne. I think Warne was 21 when he debuted. Now, not wanting to offer the, you know, say he's going to be Shane Warne or anything like that, but you need to persist. Warne took famously one for 150 out here in his first Test match, and they stuck fat with him, and we saw the rewards of that. So hopefully, from his perspective, it isn't like Adil Rashid, who got a sustained period in the side for England last winter and was punted as soon as he got home. When they're like, well, we're back in England now, we can just deal with you know, having the finger spin of Moeen Ali and Liam Dawson who came in as well. So I think that they, you know, it's hard to judge off one afternoon's bowling, but it feels like he's got the right parts in the right places to play a role internationally.
You impressed by Moeen today?
Yeah, it's the best he's bowled on tour. I think that the fact that he got brought on early when Usman came in was a pretty aggressive move, and he was able to get two maidens under his belt in his first two overs. He's not bowled a maiden, you know, perhaps not bowled two maidens on the spin all series, I'd hazard a guess to say, and that obviously helps build confidence, and that was what's been missing with his batting and his bowling. Even today with the bat, he played quite conservatively early on. He was mostly just tucking off his hip. He put away his cover drive, and, you know, he's about this, you know, he's proverbial inch away from being dropped from the England side. This was the guy when he came out here 3 months ago, was held not in the same esteem as Ben Stokes as an all-rounder, but not far off that. A guy that made 400s the previous calendar year, played really well in England with ball and bat against South Africa last year. And he was the player of the series in that series. So, you know, but to go from that height to where he's nearly getting punted is a big shift. So hopefully, again, from his perspective, that this is a bit of a turning point for him. But geez, he's lucky to have kept his spot, because he was absolutely dross in Melbourne with the ball. And when he came out to bat, it was like he'd never done it before. It was a schizophrenic innings, to say the least.
And just quickly, how do you see the test panning out from here?
I think that it's still got the potential to be quite a dreary test match. Just before we came in here, Joe Root was standing at second slip in a helmet to Jimmy Anderson. Now, Jimmy Anderson isn't Mitchell Starc, but if you're standing that far up a second slip on day two, if balls aren't carrying to the keeper, which they're not, Smith edged broad not long before that as well.
Yeah. And wasn't he furious, broad? Yeah, that would have been 400.
Well, yeah, he was roaring down that, you know, he knew that was the finally he'd drawn
Smith
a legitimate edge.
Scout. There'll be, you know, footage of this for the rest of my career. They'll flash back to it. This could have been the moment for me, 400.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And Smith proceeds to... That was when he was on 6,000 career runs. Like, it was all, you know, it was a reminder of just how good Smith is as well. Yeah. But I quite like the idea of Crane getting him first up, because that'll mean Overton, Curran and Crane have all picked up Smith with their first wicket in Test cricket.
It's like, very misleading.
Well, yeah. It's like going home with a supermodel first up, and, you know, it doesn't really sort of get much better than that, does it?
Didn't Peter George get Tendulkar? That was his first wicket.
And that's right. Peter Siddle as well.
Office Works.
I think Peter Siddle's first Test wicket. It may not have been Tendulkar, but it was fairly early on.
Right.
They're probably quite a good book in that. People have taken remarkable scalps with their first wicket in Test cricket, we'll see.
So, Cole, I just want to ask you one more thing. I mean, we talked about selections, but I just want to finish on this. So, let me play devil's advocate here. So, I mean, Bancroft looks completely out of touch. Shaun Marsh's, this is his first time in his Test career he's ever played five Test matches in a row for Australia. We've got Mitchell Marsh batting six. Now, all these selections have worked out really well for the selectors. So, like, it's harsh to criticise him, because Mitchell Marsh comes in, first Test match was 180.
Yeah.
is Mitchell Marsh the number six for Australia long term? I don't think anyone is truly believing that. So what happens? What I'm saying is, what happens if Sean Marsh breaks down with a sore back, Bancroft's gone, and Mitchell Marsh gets found out by Steyn in South Africa?
I'm pretty okay with it. I'm against the grain on this. I'm a Mitch Marsh believer. Been for a long time. Yeah. On the basis that he has, as he says himself, when he got back from India last year, he was completely focused on how he was going to play red ball cricket. He forewent the IPL auction in order to play county cricket for Surrey next year. Now, he may not play very much county cricket
at
all.
That is a big move for his personal brand as well.
Yeah,
that's a real statement.
Mm. Like, absolutely.
I'm going to forego these IPL riches and I'm going to work on my red ball cricket in England.
He's going against like his rig-based selection. Like
he's reinventing himself.
He's reinventing himself. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Well, it's exactly what... It's similarities to what Josh Hazlewood did a couple of years ago. He missed the IPL in order to just get himself right for that long tour of the West Indies followed by England. Mm. And that played out quite nicely for him as man of the series in the West Indies.
There's obviously a great history of cricketers doing this, you know, focusing, going to England,
yeah,
making a real statement about that.
Well, Chris Rogers
is a good example.
Well, Rogers spoke about it at every media conference he did after he retired, saying we need to get more players going to England. The rules have changed somewhat in recent years, but there's nothing precluding someone of Mitch Marsh's calibre getting the no objection certificate and going over and being the pro. Now, yeah, there's a lot of cricket being played next winter for Australia overseas. They're playing one days in England. Mm. They're touring the UAE later in the winter. I'm not quite sure whether there'll be something else spliced in Zimbabwe. That's yet to be determined. But still, the idea that he's making that statement not to play IPL in order to basically do a pre-season in England, it can only be good for the side. Last year, Travis Head didn't play for Australia A in favour, or it was 2016 actually, didn't play for Australia A in favour of playing for Yorkshire. Cameron Bancroft went to Gloucestershire a couple of years ago. We saw Jake Lehman at Yorkshire. We saw Glenn Maxwell also playing some county cricket at Yorkshire. So they've shown, they've realised and evaluated they have a problem against England in England, of course not having won there since 2001. So, and I like the idea that Mitchell Marsh is sort of buying into that. So as to whether he's going to go out and score 400 runs in four tests in South Africa, that's yet to be seen. But I think that his mind's in the right place to do precisely that. The runs he made in Perth, flat track, hard track, bouncy track, his home ground, all the conditions were right for him to perform well there. Australia were doing well as he came in. But look, I do believe that he has the right bits in the right places. I said the same thing about Mason Crane before, but I
certainly has a good rig.
And he has got a great rig. And he's a lovely guy. This may not fit into the great cricketer psyche, but Mitch is a...
We're all believers for different reasons of Mitch Marsh.
He's a particularly...
more aesthetic.
He's a particularly nice guy. Well, on that alone, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, speaking of rig-based selection, that Marcus Stoinis, I mean, he's got the best... Yeah. Lid in cricket.
Good lid.
Really no question about
good
it.
Good salad, yeah.
Big rig. And like got that triangle thing going on.
Yeah.
Nice smile. You can just imagine what it would have been like. He probably what he's still like on the nightclub dance floors of Perth.
I do wonder.
I often wonder that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, imagine having a night out on the tiles with Marcus Stoinis. It would just be it would be really something. A night circuiting with the big Stoinis. But no, I think he'd be a decent show of getting a ticket to South Africa too, because each time he's played for Australia, he stepped up, whether it was in India earlier this year, obviously in New Zealand when he made those runs in a hurry, you know, when Australia were in all sorts at the start of 2017. So, yeah, watch out for Marcus Stoinis. He'll be the bolter.
Good stuff, Colo. Well, it's been fascinating as always, mate. And enjoy the rest of the test. I know it's been a long tour for you, as it has for many press guys out there. So hopefully you'll survive it and get a couple more circuits under your belt.
Yeah.
Before the end of the series and the media night tonight. Tomorrow, should I say. Nights. For you and your blood.
It is the night of nights. It's, I wouldn't say it's the Brownlow. I wouldn't say it's probably more like the Dally M for you tip rats in New South Wales. I mean, it's you know, it's a bit more low rent version of the Brownlow. We're not going to be in tuxedos, that's for sure. But I'm always happy to come on and talk to you. I always feel like you ask me really serious cricket questions, and I can't be my real, true, authentic self. I can't play my natural game. But maybe another time.
Next time we'll get you on.
Maybe another
rig
time.
Rig 11.
Yeah, the Rig 11, chopping,
all this stuff.
It's
yeah.
more my natural space. You draw me out of my natural space to talk about cricket. But all I really want to do is talk about bedroom and bathroom stuff. Anyway, next time.
Next time.
Thanks, Colo.